Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for November the 1st in the year 2022. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call would like to say their names so that others can associate a name to the voice, now would be a good time for that.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
And I'm Gord Tischer.
Great. So we have some topics on our auto-generated agenda for the day. We have the Pony C repo. Let's start with the RFC's repo, pull request 203, add RFC for the inclusion of all erase codes in the term package.
Yes, for some reason, there's also empty ranges has some activity. I realized why it didn't get tagged just now. It's a fun one because it's from a first-time contributor. Until somebody presses the allow stuff to run, it doesn't actually run. So there's two RFCs. There's also 201 is tagged, even though it's not in the agenda, Joe.
Okay. Well, let's begin with 203 there. So let's see. So you have a comment, Sean, from 5 days ago about a better implementation idea.
Ignore that one.
Okay.
Because if you go to the last comment, it says, I had a dir, which led to the thing from 5 days ago, and I've updated the actual RFC to not have the dir. I was thinking that you couldn't, I forgot about exhausted match when this was being done. So, right. Yeah.
Which is actually exhaustive match is an interesting point. This is a little bit of diversion from the RFC itself, but it's related because I was asking about, all right, why a private type alias for the union? And the interesting thing that is, if so, just on the topic that we've discussed from time to time about like, what constitutes a change that can break compilation?
Mm-hmm.
A public type union that has a new member added to it can break compilation of other libraries if they use that public name in certain ways.
Yes.
Whereas
this is a private one in this case. Yeah.
Right.
And for bringing it back to the RFC for a moment, I'd be happy to do away with the private alias if you don't like it. I just thought it made it a little easier to actually look at the definition of it and understand what was going on, but a little cleaner, but I have no problem with just dropping the union straight in as well.
I think it's probably better to have the, I think it's better as it is. I thought the question of like a public versus private name for that union was an interesting one, but I think private makes sense. And I'm going to go ahead and click approve to signal that I have no further comments or issues on this RFC.
Have you read this one, Joe? I mean, Gordon. I know Ryan had also already done it.
It looks good to me.
Okay, I'm going to move this over to final comment period because it's a simple one and we have a lot of a lot of around it now.
Now moving back to 201. This is RFC pull request 201, introduce empty ranges. So there's been some comments about, Ryan says, I believe there's still an open conversation about how or if we should change reverse to match the changes here to range.
So yeah, pretty much the doc string for reverse says that it's meant to be the opposite of range. And whether that is actually true or not, Ryan's statement is that he believes that it should be true and that he thinks it would be reasonable to include changes to reverse as part of this RFC.
Okay.
But at the same time that I believe if I'm reading this correctly, that he would be okay with this going forward and having a separate RFC to bring reverse in line. If my belief, I would say that if we believe that reverse should in fact be the opposite of range, then I think it should be part of this RFC.
I would agree with that statement.
We'll put a comment to that effect, right?
Okay. Trying to find my tab now. Ugh, I have way too many windows. Yeah, for some reason I can't find the window where I was there. Interesting. Okay, there we go. Found the tab. So, all right. So you didn't say that yet in the ticket. Okay, I just did. Okay.
I just did, and then I'm going to add in a separate one that I agree with Ryan's statement that reverse should be the opposite of range. Therefore, I think reverse. Therefore, I think changes to reverse should be added to this RFC. Those are my two statements.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe that reverse should be the opposite of range. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah. It's weird because
I'm going to update mine.
There's more than one discrepancy. I don't know if the doc string is wrong. That's an interesting question to check. So the first thing that's weird that I notice is that reverse says it produces a decreasing range with square bracket max to square bracket min, whereas range goes from square bracket min to parentheses max. So it's non-inclusive of max. Reverse is... So, okay, yeah, reverse begins at max, which when it's less than or equal to, and it keeps going as long as it is greater than or equal to min. So it is indeed, reverse is indeed inclusive of both numbers. Range is non-inclusive of the second number.
Okay, I will comment to that.
Because that's just before we even get into talking about, you know, direction, that's already wonky. It already doesn't match between the two.
So maybe this is a dumb question, but since range can take a negative step, why do we need reverse?
I don't think that's a dumb question at all. Arguably, for convenience, but I mean,
so that it can get out of sync with the other.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's non-inclusive. Range, if you use a negative step, it actually goes in reverse. Whereas reverse, if you use a negative step, it doesn't go forward. It only produces one value and then exits, according to the doc string anyway. And also, yeah, according to, yeah, I believe that's according to reality as well. That's not true. Oh, yes, it is true. Because reverse has the assumption, like, reverse will only keep going if max is greater than min. Whereas, yeah, range allows min to be greater than max, and it kind of internally sets its state differently if when it is. Yeah. So there are many ways in which reverse is not currently the opposite, the symmetrical opposite of range. I wonder how often it is used, like in, for example, just beginning in the standard library. So we have a test. So a test for reverse uses reverse. We have it itself. We have a persistent vector version or a persistent vector dot reverse will, it uses the reverse iterator. Okay, so it is used one place in the standard library, and obviously that could easily be refactored to not use it there.
Where is it used?
In collections persistent vec. Around line 221, it's used to populate a new vec that has the elements reversed in it.
Oh, right. So
it's just convenience compared to using range with a negative.
But easily could be replaced. Yeah. So I think the only thing that we could say that reverse has going for it is that it's a little easier to reason about, perhaps.
Yeah, because you may not immediately know that it range. Yeah. In fact, I don't have at the top of my head whether, like, for example, whether I should, without looking at the doc string, I wouldn't know if I should be setting the min to be larger than max when I want to go in reverse, or if I just set a negative step but keep min smaller than max. But looking at the doc string, I see you're supposed to put the greater number first. So you write to go do like a negative going range, you do the larger number and then the smaller number and then a negative one for the step or negative whatever, which I would not immediately know that off the top of my head if I didn't have practice with it. I wouldn't know whether I should give the bigger number first or the smaller number first.
So if we were to keep reverse, it seems like though that So when, if we were to keep reverse, we want it to be the mirror opposite of range, then we would be introducing some breaking changes, right? That's a breaking change.
Yes. Yeah, existing uses of reverse would be, they would be broken in non-obvious ways. Yeah, it would not be a compilation error unless we do efforts to make it so.
Yeah.
And so suddenly they would be, non-inclusive of the larger number. They would be...
So that is the interesting bit when people if people switch to range, they need to keep the non-inclusive bit in mind, right? I feel like the best thing to do now would be to remove range as part of this RFC.
Remove reverse.
Yeah. Remove reverse. And if we need reverse in the future, if it turns out that the utility of having reverse specifically is very important, right? Then we can have a discussion on its own for reverse, for what characteristics reverse should have, why, and if it should mirror range.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. I will update with yet another comment, okay?
Sounds good.
Gordon, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I added a thumbs up to your comment.
All right. So let's move on to the next topic of on our generated agenda. PonyC pull request 4218, add nightly Windows stress tests. This is a draft PR. Do you want to discuss this, Sean, or anything to bring up?
Gordon, how about you discuss it right now? Because I'm still writing this comment. Because I think you're capable of that. So.
There's a Windows problem, which I have to take a look at, and I haven't had time yet, but I hope to do that in the next couple of days. That's about it.
Okay. And we're hoping the stress tests will reveal something about this problem in a CI environment.
Well, no. So the problem is that the stress tests don't start up and run, probably because I'm doing a PowerShell thing wrong, but okay. I'm not sure what it is. And I tried for quite some time to figure it out. And Gordon's going to look at that. The stress tests in general will hopefully potentially, it would be the first step towards us knowing if we have any problems on Windows x86 that we're currently unaware of that we might see by regularly running for extended periods of time the U-Bench one.
Okay, and we're also running it in LLDB. I've had no end of problems with LLDB on Windows, that could be a problem. I'll investigate further.
Okay, I definitely wanted to try and run it with LLDB. I mean, we have the aren't we running PR stuff with LLDB on for the Windows? I thought I saw that's what was happening currently for the test.
I can't remember that you and
Dippin added that when it was added to just about everything else.
I can't remember if we got Windows working or not. I'll have to double check.
It looks like it.
Yeah, I'll try and take a look at that later this week.
Right. It's certainly the running an LLDB makes stress tests more useful because you can actually get a dump for when like a seg fault or something happens rather than just going, great, we ran a stress test and a seg fault happened.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Yeah. Speaking of which, Joe, you're going to get to an issue, which is exactly that.
Shall we go there? 4219, seg fault in runner test on FreeBSD.
Yes.
No meaningful information. Yeah.
There's not really much to say about this, except, hey, we had it happen, you know? I think, you know, we don't use the LLDB on any of our runner tests, right? That is something we could discuss at some point, whether we want to go through making it so that we can use LLDB on the runner tests.
Yeah.
I haven't checked yet with the FreeBSD for whether the runner itself is being run under LLDB, right? So at least in theory, you know, based on this what was available in the logs, I guess this could have been the runner itself seg faulting as well. I haven't looked to see whether it's running under LLDB, but if it's not, then it could have been the runner as well. But there you go. There is at least something that can happen on FreeBSD, and perhaps somebody, if they ran these numerous times, would be able to figure out what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Looks like you removed the label.
Yeah.
And we have next up issue ticket 4178, inconsistent compiler behavior for array literals in field initialization.
Okay. All right. This looks like Stefan TD said that he doesn't feel capable of tackling this one. So I will remove the discuss during sync. And yeah, this is probably not one which is a good first issue one. So we'll just have that open.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not a good first issue. Okay.
It's 4174 on there.
4174, memory corruption via array.copy2.
Let's see why this got tagged. Oh, this was did we leave this on last week? Because I think we left this on because we were hoping Borja was going to be around.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, okay, so we could leave that on for now.
Yeah. 3981, Windows network tests are flaky.
I know that this would be because I definitely left a comment on it. It's, what is it? It's 3981?
3981.
Sorry, I don't have the agenda open right now, so yeah. 3981. What did I say?
Said, I'm starting to think from the Windows runner stopping in mid-run when not using sequential and these failures that we sometimes lose Windows IOCP events.
Ah, yes.
That would be an interesting finding.
So I found a number of things and I merged some things. One, do you remember when I did the changes to some Atomics usage? Because when Borja ported some stuff over, there were some clear definite errors and some things that may or may not have been errors.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah.
So I noticed that I missed one of the things that I changed as part of that PR also existed in the IOCP subsystem, but I missed it then. So I pushed an update to that a few days ago. After that went in, I turned the Windows networking tests back on. And so we can see if they're flaky or not anymore.
Okay.
But in relation to this comment, what I found was that, you know, we had that problem with like timeouts on the Windows builds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in the runner test. So I spent a long time thinking it was something highly difficult. And it turns out that I thought I had solutions twice and then realized that no, it was still randomly happening. Then I found something which was a clear 100% fix where I was able to run like 15 times in a row with no problem whatsoever. And that was running sequentially, right? So I started looking at what the runner used to do because the runner has been changed. And previously when Gordon wrote it, the runner had a value that it took for a wait interval before starting another test, right? So that when you went to say, if you were not running sequentially, it would be like, hey, I'm going to wait for like X number of milliseconds, and then I will fire off the test, right? After it's been decided that the test, another test instance should be started up. And that involved a timer. And what it looks like from all of the pauses and everything that would happen is that we were not getting that timer event sometime. And therefore, when this would happen often enough, we would eventually stop running tests. And it would just hang. I changed it so that there is no sequential anymore. There's just a max parallelism. And if you want sequential, you set it to one. And whether you do one or any number of max parallelism, it does the same thing, which is when it's time to run a test, it just runs a test. There's no timer in there at all. And there have been no issues since then. That combined with the fact that Windows networking stuff, we have seen the stuff being flaky, suggests to me that given we appear to lose timer events getting lost periodically would explain our hangs on the other. And network events getting lost would also explain flaky Windows network tests. That I think that perhaps we were or are losing IOCP events every now and then. That is what caused me to start going looking in the IOCP.c, which is where I found that atomics being different and not what I was expecting. So I switched that over. And I'm now going to wait to, and I've turned everything on, and we're going to see if we have any of those problems crop up. I would be surprised if the atomics one fixes anything in our tests, because it is my understanding that with the relaxed memory order that it was using, that should only be impactful on ARM, not on x86. But I am not 100% positive on that. So I just want to see what happens at this point. But if either of those, if the Windows network stuff keeps failing, I think it's reasonable to start looking at IOCP. The runner tests will no longer fail because I removed the timer entirely from that being there.
All right.
Phew.
That's cool. Thanks,
Sean. And I am going to close this issue for now, because maybe it's fixed, maybe it's not.
Wait, you're going to close the issue because it might be fixed?
Yeah. And we can open a new one if it turns out that it's not fixed.
Okay.
I mean, it's flaky. How do you determine flaky? We did some stuff. We think it's not flaky. I made the change, and then I ran it. Then I kept telling Cirrus CI to rerun it multiple times, and I had no networking test failures.
Okay, right? Fair enough.
So I could not see flaky. I ran like 10 times, and nothing failed. Okay. When we turned it off, it was failing like at least one out of every two times. So I don't know.
Okay, sounds good. Let's see, we have new activity on ticket 3874 in the PonyC repo. This is related to exception handling on ARCH64. Sean says, I retested this. It looks like the effects both debug and looks like it affects both debug and release version of the runtime, which was either overlooked when I first opened this issue or is new. Either way, it makes me feel a little better that it isn't only happening with release versions of the runtime.
Yes.
Does that make you feel like less likely that it's an LLVM bug if it's happening in debug?
No, it makes me feel more likely. And under no mental model could I come up with an explanation for why it was different between debug and release versions of the runtime. There's literally nothing in the code suggested.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, I misread.
It is far more sensical what I'm getting now. I don't know if I don't. I still believe what I wrote there in 2021 was what I was seeing at the time, but I am now wondering whether I was actually testing what I thought I was testing when I saw that, right? But anyway, I wanted to update to the what is the actual reality, right?
Okay.
But I didn't want to just update the original comment because perhaps the previous one was correct. I just don't know. I can't go back in time. And
all right. So let's see, that covers our auto-generated agenda, except for, I guess, NetSSL repo issue ticket 75, update window for SSL.
Yes. Gordon, do you at some point in with your limited amount of time, could you try updating the Libre SSL version that's used for NetSSL? I tried and I failed.
Oh, yeah, totally. I will. I seem to have missed a notification for that, so I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, I am trying with the Windows things, and I'm succeeding with some. Heck, I even installed Pony and Pony Up on my Windows box in order to work on some stuff the other day. I still don't. I'm not at the point of building Pony or anything on Windows, but I'm working towards it.
Nice.
I mean, I work at Microsoft. I should be able to do this, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Shame on you, Sean.
I mean, almost all of the stuff I work on runs on not Windows. So, well, that's not even vaguely true, actually. But anyway.
This is what you tell yourself.
Well, no, but the
yeah,
all the stuff that I work on right now that runs on Windows is written in Go, and I can build it on in a WSL environment and then copy the stuff over to the Windows environment in order to have it run. So, yeah. Working on it. All right. Well, do we have anything?
Which is something we could enable for the Pony. This is just a tie-in, right? If we had libLLD and libClang, I don't think we need libClang. If we had libLLD embedded, then we could do the same thing for the Pony compiler. You could run.
You've just segued into a thing.
Yes.
So, Joe, at one point in the past, I started to do a bit with the embedded LLD, right? We've changed it. Stuff has changed enough that rebasing it was awful. I've opened a new branch for that. I wanted to discuss with you. I have it so that it includes embedded LLD. Do you think if I sent you that branch name, you would be up for, because you have done this already and in a different context, for doing the basic wiring of cross command line and everything of switching us over? And I will do the fun of getting the actual flags and everything and it working on all the different environments.
Okay.
I will send
so
you.
Have you already got the CMake and everything set up? So
I have the CMake set up. Yes. Cool. I do not have any of the, and I have a class that I cribbed from you for handling the output in, but it might be in, but it's almost assuredly not really correct. And okay. none of the wiring for getting stuff from command line options all the way on through is actually done. I tried to figure out why I had done what I'd done the first time, and I couldn't. And also, I didn't really know what I was doing the first time. I feel like if you did that and you put the framework in for it, that would be best. And then I can just start plugging stuff into it.
Yep, I can do that.
All right. It's funny that you brought up the embedded LLD, because that was going to be my, does anybody have anything they want to discuss? And I'm going to be like, yes, I'd like to discuss embedded LLD, actually.
Right. Which would enable the same workflow you were just talking about that you use with Go, where you're compiling inside WSL, but it has the Windows SDK available because, hey, you're on a Windows machine. And as long as it knows where to look for the Windows SDK. But you can cross compile with LLVM, you can cross link with LLD, and happy times. And if you're Windows averse like me, you can actually test all that out in Wine without having to run a real Windows machine, and it mostly can test what you need to test to prove that it works.
Have you ever tried running Pony Windows binaries on Wine to see if it works?
I have run binaries that use the Pony runtime on Wine. Yes.
Okay. All right. That's a yes as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. I sent you the name of the branch in the private message. Note the -2.
Yeah. Okay, I'll note the -2. Yeah, but yeah, I have used Wine for this, and like, yeah, I found that it works for like running, you know, basic test programs, including with IOCP. So yeah. Okay, well, I'll take a look at that branch and see how I can help. Anything else you want to discuss while we're here together? All right. Well, thanks everyone. And thanks those who attended, those who are listening to the recording. We'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.